Hello, and welcome to Partially Redacted, a podcast where we discuss privacy and security engineering and related topics. I'm your host, Shubh Faulkner, and today I'm joined by Shubh Sinha, CEO and co-founder of Integral, and we'll be talking about protecting sensitive health data while also keeping it usable. Shubh, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sean. Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's great to have fans. We'll probably pivot the show at some point when we have fans on, and we'll spend at least 25 minutes talking about how great the show is before we get into anything meaningful.
Well, I think you're starting with me. I'm the first fan on the show then.
All right. Well, thanks for being here. No, I was digging a little bit into your background and prep for our conversation. And I saw you've kind of done a little bit of like everything, starting in college, you did some sales. You were an engineer for a little bit, an architect, and did some product work. And in many ways, like this combination of experience is kind of the perfect recipe for eventually becoming like a CEO or founder, because essentially you kind of have to wear all hats in some capacity. And you know enough about different things to hold a conversation and be dangerous, but not necessarily be an expert in that thing. Was this kind of always the plan?
I think if it was always the plan, it looked really good, right? But I think if I look in hindsight, I was always somebody who dove very deep into specific types of subjects and topics. And so let's take engineering and even then like mobile development as opposed to web app development, which I ended up doing a little bit of both sequentially. But I think it was just kind of like a one by one where I dove in, wanted to gain a certain amount of expertise, and then wanted to work a job in it. And then I think I quickly moved to a new topic. And so I think it's some function of I found it to be quite energizing to dive in very deeply and then draw a dot to somewhere else. So like go from mobile dev to web dev. And then, as I started my first company in college with my current co-founder, and so this is our second time around, I realized very quickly that while it was fun making the products, it was even more fun talking to users and, hearing what they liked and then especially what they didn't like so that we could go back on the engineering side and fix it. And so I think that really gravitated me towards like users, and product was the most natural fit for being in between users and engineering and BD and all of that. And so I would say all this to say that I think I dive very quickly into subject matter expertise and then extract myself somewhat quickly as well, and then enjoy connecting the dots between all the different stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of had in some ways like a similar path where I started out very much engineering focused, and I did it for a longer period of time than I think that you did it. But I found, now I love talking to users. I love talking to customers, people in the community. And that's been a big part of my career for really the last like decade or so. But I would say the first sort of like 10 years as an engineer coming out of college, like, I really struggled with that. Like it was a hard, like I wasn't as comfortable with it. It took me a while. Like, I don't think it's something that came natural to me. I had to take sort of reps and condition myself to really enjoy it. Was that something that more came natural to you, and that's why you sort of gravitated to it fairly quickly in your career?
Yeah, I would say it. A little bit of it was natural in the sense that I always wondered, as soon as I made some sort of app or made some sort of website, I always wondered how it did. And so maybe there was always this natural inkling of what comes next in the conveyor belt process from starting from scratch to deploying to users and getting their feedback. But I would say the art of talking to users or even just getting out there, I think I just got lucky with working at a number of startups early to where it really wasn't a choice at a certain point. And so both as a kind of like a natural skill set was developing, I think I was just kind of catalyzed by being pushed into it. And I think that is what ended up kind of making it more of like a, hey, I think I can do this kind of thing. And then just kind of dove head deep into talking to users. And so all this to say, I think the natural skill set was maybe developing, but I don't think it would have been nearly as catalyzed if I had not been in the right situation where it was kind of forced on me to step out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think when you're an engineer in a startup, like a smaller organization, you're probably, you're going to be closer essentially to what happens after I, finish my sprint and complete my, PR or the feature goes live. You're probably naturally closer to customers, which could be like a faster track to, finding that side of your personality that likes doing that stuff, maybe moving into product. I think in like bigger technology companies as an engineering organization, it can be very easy to be sort of siloed and insulated, and you're really focused on the technical challenges, but you might not have as much visibility into how are people actually using the product, what is the reception of that product, and so on.
And I think that's also where some of the incentives come into play as well, where I think in a startup, maybe it's not as explicit, but implicitly, if a user doesn't like a particular app, a particular feature, the engineering team will at some point be looped in to catch either some blame or you know, vice versa, the success of some feature doing really well. Whereas I think at a much larger company, you're siloed both from the positive and negative consequences of any kind of change there. And so I do think that being positioned in startups earlier, just by sheer luck, to be honest, like I think I just kind of lucked into startups and found that, you know, if you're going to be judged on something, you really want to make sure that you have some amount of control or influence over it. And so I think that's also what, you know, prevents the silos, because you're kind of in the hot seat, even if you're not directly sitting on it. Like, you might be sitting on it at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that kind of brings us to the, you know, the present, where you're the co-founder CEO of Integral. So what was the motivation behind starting Integral, and like, what problem were you trying to solve?
For sure. So I discovered the problem for Integral actually while I was working at my previous company, LiveRamp, a public ad tech company based out of the Bay. And just for some context into LiveRamp, because it makes the rest of the story make sense, LiveRamp made its bones in the consumer and the CPG side of the world, where let's take like a brand like Kellogg. Kellogg cereal has tons of inventory across Whole Foods, Walmart, CVS, all these different places. And you can think about all those stores as data silos, because Kellogg doesn't own a Walmart or a Whole Foods. And so it's kind of like this agent problem where all of their data is siloed between organizations they don't control. And yet they are the ones responsible for piecing together the picture as to how you and I shop, our habits, our families, all of that. And so all this to say, like, LiveRamp came in and really broke down those data silos for those brands that I like to say are cash rich and data poor, and really put the complete picture for them. And so when I showed up at LiveRamp, I was on this nascent Google X-like team whose mandate was to do exactly that, but for the healthcare side, and even more specific in healthcare, with the pharma side. Because if you think about a Pfizer and a Kellogg, while totally different companies, they're actually not that different from an architecture perspective, where there is no Pfizer pharmacy, there is no Pfizer doctor's office. Like, all their data is siloed between all these different points in the journey for people like you and me to receive care. And so when I got there, I built a ton of custom analysis products to take people's health data, people's consumer data, people's geographic data, and kind of combine it together so you can find out how many Shub Sinhas are there. Have they received the COVID vaccine? Is it because they're in a rural area that has little to no care? Or are they in a city that has tons of pharmacies, but the Shub Sinhas of the world, or say in New York, don't know where to get it? They don't know where to get coverage. And so it's really this like multifaceted problem that was solved through data. But the problem was that connecting healthcare data and consumer data is quite challenging, especially because you have, you know, terms like HIPAA and privacy and GDPR thrown around. And so all this to say, I realized very quickly that companies can buy data very easily. They can analyze it very easily. They can't connect the underlying data very easily because of all the regulations involved. I mean, it would take, you know, a big pharma like 13, 14 weeks to be able to put a data set together, and let alone make a decision to roll out a vaccine in a particular area where care is hard to find, and then measure the decisions. And I think when it comes to these types of medical outcomes, 13, 14 weeks is just unsustainable. And so I led the manual process to go through compliance for all these different data sets many times with the consultants of the world. And I realized very quickly there should be a solution that automates this. And so that's where the idea for Integral came from, which was I was just kind of in the thick of it day to day with all these customers and partners and seeing the outcomes on consumers. And I saw very quickly that there needs to be a technology to accelerate the path to good medical outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned like buying data sets there and sort of the problems that come along with that. But even outside of buying data sets, like, every company, especially in the digital health space, is struggling with even using the data that they collect in a way that's like safe and compliant. Like, you're using, you know, Snowflake or Databricks or some sort of downstream analytics platform. Like, how do I give my data science team or analytics team access to the data to be able to look at, you know, something like, I don't know, primary, secondary outcomes for some sort of clinical trial, but not risk exposure of the actual patient information or their identity? Is a big challenge for every company in that space.
Definitely. And the way I like to think about it is, you know, the problem that I discovered, I only discovered it because a majority of LiveRamp was actually not healthcare. Like, I would like to say it's like 80-20 or something like that, where it was 80% outside of healthcare, 20% inside of healthcare. But I saw that a Pfizer data scientist and like a Kellogg data scientist, they have the exact same goals. aggregate data, whether it's your own, whether you buy others, and then slice and dice it so that you can understand people like you and me and deliver them better outcomes. For Kellogg, obviously, it's more cereal or more food. And then for Pfizer, it's vaccines or certain types of messaging. But effectively, it's the same exact behavior, just the industry difference. And I realized very quickly, compliance is the key breakdown for speed. And I think a data scientist in healthcare should be able to act like a data scientist in any other industry and truly just kind of go work with data very quickly to affect people's outcomes like you and me. And so definitely spot on there, where even arming your own organization with your own data is a challenge. And I believe the fulcrum of that is compliance.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I could be wrong about this, but maybe it has to do with the sort of echo chamber I live in, but I feel like there seems to be more and more startups like focused on, you know, life sciences, healthcare, digital health. Like, is that also your perception as well? And what do you think, if that's the case, like, what do you think is sort of fueling the growth and like interest from the startup space?
For sure. And I would say anecdotally, especially across the last 3 years, I've come across more and more companies serving life sciences and parts of what I'll just call more broadly legacy healthcare that weren't as served before. Because I think what makes the headlines is, you know, the Salesforces of the world, the Facebooks of the world, which are definitely doing great things in their own right. But they're mainly servicing the large organizations that we all know and sometimes love, right? It's like the obvious big orgs. But I think people in the past 3 years, especially due to COVID, have realized legacy healthcare is a massive, massive part of the world. And then from an economics perspective, it represents so much of our GDP in the United States. Like, I think COVID was kind of like a spotlight in that way. And so more and more startups, I think, came around where, you know, similar to us, they noticed things that are normal in any other industry outside of healthcare are just not possible in healthcare, and specifically in life sciences and legacy healthcare. And I think that really catalyzed the path for a lot of startups to start and start, I would say, serving life sciences customers, where I think you have a mixture of like technology speed has just gone quickly in any other space besides healthcare. And then healthcare kind of pointed out when we all were at home for 3 years or 2 years and realized very quickly that the basic functionalities that a Salesforce can do, a Pfizer should be able to do as well. And it's just not possible because there's not enough vendors with not enough great solutions. And so I think it's kind of a function of like recent events as well as just technology's pace outside of healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that there's a lot of the healthcare system that's still sort of, you know, running on 1970s, 1980s technology, you know, very like heavy paper industry. Like, even the fact that when you switch, you know, providers or you switch doctors, the amount of work that has to go into like sort of connect and send your history between those. It's like, you know, we live in a completely connected world where we can, you know, connect the dots between different systems very, very easily. It just doesn't exist in healthcare. And I think that, you know, I don't think there's a person particularly in the US, that would necessarily argue with, if you said publicly that our healthcare system could use some, you know, tweaks and potentially modernization. There's this like big, big opportunity to really revolutionize like health research, patient treatment, drug design, patient monitoring, all these different things. And by putting, you know, smart, motivated people on it that leverage technologies in new, interesting ways. Now, that being said, it does come with a certain amount of responsibility with respect to privacy and security of the data you handle. Like, what do you think some of the challenges are that startups working in this space might face from a regulation standpoint that maybe a traditional sort of consumer-facing startup that's outside of the healthcare system or digital health space doesn't have to deal with?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say that there's a couple of obstacles that I would say that any startup founder who wants to be in a, especially in the legacy healthcare part of the world, should really be aware of, which is, you know, relative to any other industry, like, I do think healthcare has a desire to move quickly, but when it comes to, you know, some of the outcomes that get affected, like vaccine rollouts and commercial research on types of patients you want to serve eventually as a healthcare company, like there's a desire for urgency, and then there's also a strong requirement for deliberate and calculated analyses. And so, you know, the classic Silicon Valley mantra of move fast and break things. Maybe move fast is accurate, but you can't break things, especially in the legacy healthcare part of the world. And so that's something we've adjusted to as well, where we don't want to sacrifice speed. But unlike any consumer company that can just roll out a feature and then roll it back if there's a bunch of backlash, like, you have to be a lot more careful and deliberate about that, especially if you're serving like life sciences types of customers, where one feature break can cause massive ripple effects. And so I would say moving fast, but in a very calculated and deliberate way needs to be a great learning that I think any startup in the space would need to make sure they digest. I think the other piece here is also that navigating this part of the world means navigating relationships and making sure you can build a lot of champions, as opposed to, you know, in any other space, potentially, like, you know, let's take sales tooling. Like, you can build one champion, and because the ACVs are low enough, sometimes you can have them sign off. But when you're powering like a healthcare data compliance program for, you know, three or four different directors at a pharma company, that's three or four people you have to accommodate simultaneously and without sacrificing any quality in those relationships. And so, you know, navigating complex landscapes, I think, is a big thing from a people perspective, to make sure that you're making the right people happy and comfortable, because they're taking a bet on your solution. And it's not the standard to take a lot of bets in legacy healthcare. So I think that's something we've gotten used to as well, which is just making sure to move fast, but deliberately, and then also navigating kind of like the people maze that exists, where making sure you get the right sign-offs and the right people in your corner.
So given that there's like probably a higher bar when it comes to security and privacy for companies operating in the space, and then also, as you mentioned, like the go-to-market could also be a little bit different than it is for, I don't know, like a, you know, PLG, Motion, like smaller ACV type of company. Does that change the types of like talent that you need to bring in earlier into the organization? Like, do you need, you know, like a compliance officer or like a head of security or something like that to come in earlier in order to make sure that you're meeting that high bar?
For sure. Yeah. And I do think the, what I'll call like the ideal startup architecture changes a little bit, especially in these spaces where, you know, it is in your best interest to get your compliance up and running in month two, as opposed to month 18, because it's going to be a key barrier to selling if you can't prove the fact that you're taking care of people's data or you're taking care of even your own organization. And so I do think it, at least at the very least, if it doesn't influence the amount of hiring you do, it definitely influences the prioritization of activities, where I would say in any other space, compliance can be thought of as kind of like an annoying thing that you just have to do. But I think for us, it's an enabler in making sure that we have the right certifications, the right posture, the right separations, all of the above. It all represents kind of like a good housekeeping practice that may seem benign on the surface, but represents a very strong positioning, I think, in the market when you're getting evaluated against vendors that may not have taken it as seriously. And I think the other piece here to the hiring point is that, you know, I've seen tons of healthcare companies at this point, and I think what I have noticed is that they have changed their hiring practices a little bit, where if the first, you know, call it three or four hires in a startup were going to be all engineers, they have prioritized potentially a BD person who has deep relationships in the space, or a compliance person who knows how to shape up a compliance program that they know will be appealing to big pharma or the payers. And so I would say the hiring practices, I have seen them modified compared to like startups that are maybe in the newer spaces or on the consumer side, where you prioritize things slightly differently. That being said, at the very least, I've seen the order of activities, even at our startup, like making sure we prioritize compliance from day one, as opposed to later. Like that, I think, is definitely an adjustment that has to be made when you come from any other space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just like if you're collecting, you know, credit cards, or you plan to collect credit card information, then, you know, it's a cost of doing business that you have to be PCI compliant, because you're not even able to, like, you know, do anything without sort of needing that bar. And it's probably similar where if you know that you're going to be collecting, you know, healthcare data, PII related to patient information, then it's just a compliance has to be there from day one, or you're not even going to be able to get up and running, because it's going to be a non-starter for selling into any of those types of businesses.
Exactly. It's almost like a reorientation around what's business critical versus what's not. And I think in, especially in our side of the world, you start to notice some activities that are business critical that, you know, your founder friends or your like other startup friends may not be thinking about as much.
Yeah. So as part of that, there's, you know, HIPAA is a big part of the healthcare regulations in the United States. So like, where does HIPAA kind of come into play when you're startup working in, you know, with health related data? And what is HIPAA for those that maybe who aren't as familiar with it, like who falls under HIPAA versus doesn't fall under it?
For sure. Yeah. So I think just starting at the very top, like HIPAA has governing or is a governing regulation around what you can and cannot do with healthcare data. And so there's tons of provisions and tons of web pages that outline the specific rules. But I think the takeaway should be that HIPAA outlines how you can use certain types of data and how you can make the most of it while also making sure that you don't violate patient privacy. I think if I had to summarize HIPAA with just two words, it is patient privacy and making sure it's utilized but not violated. And I think where it comes into play in our world is when you're, say, a big pharma and you're buying tons of different data sets as well as using your own internally generated data sets and you're combining them all, you can very quickly understand how my medical profiles of what, you know, what prescriptions I have, my history of surgeries, which doctor I go to, combine that with where I live, my ethnicity, my race, my social profiles online. You can find out very quickly if you put enough columns together in a data set, you could identify a Shep syndrome very quickly. And HIPAA says that that is just not okay, and understandably so, because you could get a pretty in-depth view. And there's been tons of penalties in the past around like improper data usage and whatnot. And so the companies that we work with really prioritize compliance, but also want to maximize their data quality. And so they bring in Integral to ensure that the data sets can be compliantly connected such that you can get enough information about Shep syndrome to make sure that you can roll out a vaccine accurately to his place of residence, or you can give him a targeted message about a new drug trial that's happening. And it, should he qualify because he has a certain type of condition, it's like he should enroll. So it's betterment for him, better for the company, et cetera. And so it's kind of like a compliant connectivity layer to power a bunch of different business decisions is the way I like to describe Integral. But really what we help you do is stay in line with HIPAA and ensure the utmost privacy and compliance without sacrificing the end business goal of getting someone or a population a better medical outcome.
So how does that work? Can you like kind of walk me through, like imagine I'm a customer interested in using Integral. How do I go about actually doing this?
For sure. So just to give you a world that looks like, you know, before Integral, you would typically have to use consultants to get your data sets ready. And so just kind of coming in with that context, you know, if you were a customer, I would, one, ask you about your data needs, your data goals, and what's the end business outcome. And so let's say it's one of our standard outcomes where you want to study the effectiveness of an ad for a new drug. So how many people saw an ad and actually ended up, you know, making a prescription purchase? And in that journey, you have not only the ad itself and the potential consumer viewing the ad, you have the specialist doctor visits in between. You always have a lag in between a doctor visit and a prescription, and then you have the pharmacy. And so at the very least, you have three different data points in that journey: the ad, the doctor, and the pharmacy. Those all three data points are owned by different entities. So as a customer, you will come to me and say, like, I need to bridge these gaps in my understanding and really get an understanding of how many people went and saw the ad, went to a doctor, and then went and purchased that prescription. So I can, you know, put another 30 million into ads to make sure that the right people with the right conditions know about this new medication that we released. And so just teeing all that up, I would say, okay, well, clearly this is a very important journey. You have to make sure you don't violate patient privacy throughout any point in this because it gets very personal. And so with Integral, what you can do is take all the data sets you've purchased for the ads, for the doctors, for the pharmacy, pipe them directly into Integral. And what we will do is run a variety of privacy analyses rooted in statistical modeling to tell you which parts of the data set are the most problematic from a risk perspective. So where in the data set are you going to identify a Shep syndrome way too closely? And then not only will we give you the problems, we'll also give you a recommended solution in the form of the same data set, but a compliant copy. And so if you're a customer, you say, okay, like how do I ensure you retain as much data as possible? So I say, we gather your preferences on the front end. This is why we do an intake, and we make sure that we can keep as much of it as possible. And oftentimes, you know, short of a social security number or anything like that, that's way too bad. We can keep most of the contents in, but in a very compliant way, and we can scrub out all of the risk, or most of the risk, I should say. And so then from then on, we will deliver a data set to some sort of data analytics environment so a data scientist can get working. And we'll also generate all the compliance paperwork. So in that way, you've now been able to bridge the gap in your understanding in the patient journey, as well as staying on the right side of the policy.
Hey there, it's Sean, host of Partially Redacted. You probably guessed that since at this point in the interview, you probably recognize my voice. I've been told for years that I have a face for podcasting, but no one has mentioned whether I have a voice for podcasting, so sorry about that. Hopefully, the awesome guest makes up for it. Anyway, if you're enjoying this episode, please support the show by subscribing and telling your friends. You can also join Partially Redacted community at skyflow.com/community. Okay, that's enough for me. Back to the show.
Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, I guess some of this relates to like HIPAA's privacy rules, which, you know, focus on sort of like the de-identification of data. And there's two methods like specified within the rule around like expert determination and safe harbor methods. Maybe can you explain a little bit about like how are those similar? How are they different? Like, and where does sort of integral play?
Definitely. So safe harbor and expert determination, as you mentioned, are two ways you can de-identify data. Safe harbor is the stripping of, I think it's the 18 identifiers that HIPAA outlines. And there's some rules around more context than that. But I would say just very simply put, you know, stripping the 18 identifiers and really, I would say, making that data set very scrubbed to the degree that you lose a lot of analytic value, but you are definitely on the right side of compliance. And then the expert determination, which is it's essentially a combinatorial and statistical analysis on a set of data to make sure that when you join a set of data together, you are sufficiently low risk to the point where you're on the right side of compliance, but you've been able to retain a lot more quality. And so the way we think about it at Integral is, you know, it's almost like two configurations where some companies, they just want to be on the ultra conservative side of the compliance, and we'll happily service them with a safe harbor. What we also notice, though, is that there's companies that are willing to be on the right side of compliance, but are trying to juice more value out of the data. So they can deliver better outcomes or faster outcomes, whatever that looks like. And so in that way, we enable expert determination as our main configuration to where the example I just described to you, we'll do the statistical analysis on the data sets, give each column a certain risk score, and then take out or edit the ones that are the riskiest so that the customer can still retain value from all the other ones. And they don't have to, I would say, lose or sacrifice a lot of value like they would in the first configuration. So it is partially due to kind of customer goals, but I would say any business that is trying to be actionable from like a commercial perspective, at the very least, they typically skew towards the expert determination side of the world because it represents more value, but still maintains the letter of the law.
Mm-hmm. And given that you're helping like accelerate the use of this data in a compliant way, like what are some of the novel use cases that you're seeing companies come to, or like this helps like enable them to be able to actually build and solve?
For sure. So just starting off the top here, I think one we see is targeted messaging attribution. And so, you know, pharma companies will spend billions and years on developing prescription drugs. But if you can't get them out to the right people with the right conditions in the right way, so, you know, accommodating if somebody's in a rural environment versus city, which, you know, oftentimes dictates care, it's not going to matter. And so we help power a lot of end-to-end analyses from the point of sending out targeted text messages to targeted ads to making sure that those actually got delivered to the right places and the right people to ensure that medication is being sent to the right folks. The other set of novel use cases around AI has been particularly interesting as of late, where you know you have a lot of LLM companies that can make a lot of difference in everyday patients' lives, whether they're affecting the care delivery side, so nurses, doctors, et cetera, or if, even on the data infrastructure side, they're making it easier to piece together different data sets or understand more and more value from the data. And so we've noticed a handful of AI use cases recently where we'll take data from very novel sources. So, you know, you can call them call centers, you can actually get notes directly from on the ground care delivery, so like patient notes. And those flow through Integral to make sure that we're compliant. They also flow through our partners, such as yourselves, to make sure that we can make sure that the information is obfuscated or edited according to our compliance, and then you know, sent into an LLM that will eventually you know, interface and make some sort of an outcome on the patient side of things. And so, you know, if I had to sum up the variety of use cases that we're seeing on the novel side, especially like you have targeted messaging attribution, you have healthcare LLM enablement, and then I would say we've also seen a lot around bespoke model training. And so, you know, LLMs are just one flavor of models. We've also seen like care delivery models, research recognition, or sorry, disease recognition models. And so there's kind of like a slew of use cases, I think, where, you know, healthcare data and really data as a whole exploded in the past 3 or 4 years. And people are looking to leverage it, understandably. And so we're seeing a decent amount of use cases kind of come out from the novel side of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And I think, you know, you touched on LLMs there, which of course is like a you know huge topic of conversation for everybody these days. But I think it's particularly interesting in the world of you know biotech and healthcare. And there's more and more companies that are trying to leverage LLMs to you know, there's just a lot of data in the world of bioinformatics. Like it's hard without having tools like AI to help you parse it and make sense of it to even, you know, push forward. And I really do think that we're sort of on the age of biology in the 21st century through being able to leverage technologies like AI that will unlock our ability to really like understand what's going on and drive new insights. But what are some of the challenges you see with using LLMs for health related data? Because there's already a lot of challenges with using LLMs for any type of data, but now we're bringing in something that is regulated and highly sensitive as well.
For sure. And I think there's a couple of ways to slice it where, you know, out of any technology, but especially an LLM, you want very accurate outputs. And so I think a big challenge is making sure the data is both compliant and very bespoke to a certain use case going into an LLM, because I think it's somewhat common understanding that if you make a certain type of LLM very bespoke, you can really make sure to cater it to a use case and deliver a very outsized amount of value for that use case. And so let's take like care delivery in hospitals, for example. If you create an LLM that can at least guide a patient through certain symptoms when they're outside of a care delivery setting, you want to make sure that data going in is from, you know, patients outside of care delivery settings. You want to make sure that you can accommodate outside perspectives. So is somebody in, I go back to city and rural because it's the most obvious difference, but is somebody in the middle of nowhere because the instructions out of that LLM need to change, as opposed to if somebody's, you know, where I am in Manhattan, where they have access to a number of resources that they may not have otherwise. And so all this to say, I think a big challenge is, you know, making sure the data is both compliant going in, but also very bespoke and well-tailored, which on its surface might seem a little contradictory. How do you get, you know, super targeted while still maintaining privacy? And I think that's where our solution comes in very handy, where, you know, we do help you walk that line and generate custom copies of data sets and make sure that we can actually get you a fit for purpose data set that gets you to your business goal. I think another one is also sourcing the right data from the perspective of, you know, your iteration cycles. So you're, as an LLM company, you're likely going to iterate and iterate and iterate, and you have to have a ton of volume of data to be able to make sure you're juicing as much value out of your LLM. And while there is a ton of data in the world, you have to make sure it's a ton of the right data. So it's like volume plus accuracy, which, you know, I'll take like the volume piece of it. Like you have to be willing to find a ton of organizations that will be willing to commercialize those data sets for the betterment of patients. And while I think there are tons of data providers in the space, there are many more that are arising now. And the key to making more data providers be available, and as a result, more abundant data, is going to be compliance, because nobody wants to commercialize their data set without making sure it's okay to do so. And so I think that's a big challenge as well, where, you know, you have some sort of novel data that you want, but it's from an organization that's never commercialized it. And so what's going to make them comfortable? Well, they want to make sure everything's above board, everything's walking the line. And so we can help get in there and navigate those relationships with our technology and with our people. And so I think that's a big one as well. And the last one is speed. Like it, as any technology company, but especially LLMs, like the speed of iteration of like the OpenAIs of the world, like it's just so quick. And I think you have to be able to keep up. And so how do you do that? You ensure that data is flowing as quickly as possible without sacrificing quality and compliance. And so I think that's another challenge that, especially in healthcare, it really rears its head, I would say.
Yeah, I think generative AI has the potential to really democratize healthcare and like be able to bring healthcare to at least some fashion of it to anyone in the world, regardless of how remote they are, as long as they have, you know, some sort of connection to the internet, or maybe even there's probably, I know there's companies that are working on deploying models directly to phones. So there could be potentially even a way to do this disconnected the internet. But if you could have, you know, essentially some sort of like assistant or co-pilot that you could walk through and give you at least some idea of whether you really need to travel to a city center to see a specialist based on like your symptoms versus, you know, do something else at home, it could really like have a transformative effect on the entire world. And that's something I'm like, you know, super excited about. And the other thing that you touched on there was this, the data providers. And I think so much of the power of an AI model is the quality of the data that's going in, right? It's basically garbage in, garbage out. So even in the world of LLMs with all the sort of big foundation model providers, like a lot of the sort of key differentiator is how good the data is going into the training of that model. And they're training on more and more data, but like they have to go through a lot of pre-processing steps to make sure the data is of like the utmost quality, and they do a lot of stuff to try to, you know, guardrail against, you know, various biases and so forth. So are you seeing, as a consequence of that, like a real growth in the data provider market for in like healthcare, because they know that this is going to be the fuel for all these models?
Certainly. So I think we're seeing two types of behaviors. One is just that the existing data providers in the space, they're seeing transaction volumes at a certain scale that they haven't observed before. And I think there's also would-be data providers or upcoming data providers where, you know, if you're a consumer app that's aggregating a certain amount of proprietary data because you're the only way a consumer can log a particular type of food or a particular type of symptom, like there's a strong appetite, I would say, from alum companies, pharma companies, really a lot of healthcare companies who are looking to utilize data to get that very unique and bespoke data set from that consumer app. But understandably so, that consumer app, like their main business is totally different. They're not looking to collect data. They have to for their business purposes. But they're realizing there's a lot of value, especially in the ones that are like very popular consumer apps, in taking that data set, making it available to like the LLM companies of the world, so that that novel data set can then be used in a way to benefit, you know, either that consumer app's users or some other patient in the world. And so all this to say, I think we're seeing an insurgence of data providers coming up where they have, there's tons of companies that have nothing to do with actually aggregating data, but they have had to because of their business function. And they're now seeing the need to make that data set available. But then again, commercialization in healthcare requires that compliance and that speed and that fine tuning. And so I think that's where we're seeing a lot of new behavior, where you have novel data providers coming into the space with very novel data sets, because there's that appetite to ingest those data sets.
Mm-hmm. And how does like data retention come into play? Like how long can you hold on to, you know, patient data based on the regulations and the type of stuff that you're doing?
For sure. So we try to lean into the typical standards that give the customers and partners the most amount of confidence. So you have NIST and like a handful of other standards that outline certain data practice procedures, and of which is retention. And so we try and hold data for the minimum amount of period required to be able to deliver value to the customer, whether that's making it compliant, sending it to a data lake, or sending it to an LLM. So we typically try to avoid holding it for too long, just because, you know, we're here to deliver the customer's data to where it needs to go and the way it needs to get there, and not retain any data because that's not our business. And so we typically notice anywhere between 15 to 30 days is very accommodating for our business practices. But we do have some customers who trust us a lot, and they want us to retain data to be able to learn from it and make their next data upload even better. And so in special circumstances such as that, we definitely work it out with them and their security departments to see if we can hold it for longer to do the job. But I would say for most of our customers, we prefer to retain for the minimum amount of time possible to do the job and make sure we're there should anything have gone wrong on the before end or the after end of integral, and so we can do what we need to do. But it's always a goal to make sure that we don't hold on to anything we don't need to for too long.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, going back to kind of where we started some of this conversation around, you know, if you're working in a space, you need this like intention always whenever you're building something to look at, you know, like to ask these questions essentially, like, you know, how long are we holding on to this? How long does actually do we need to? And also, what's the minimal amount of data that we actually need to collect in order to, you know, successfully solve the problem that we care about? Like, it's always asking the sort of these questions up front and taking that into account in your sort of product and in engineering rollout before just kind of, you know, like, hey, we'll collect everything, we'll hold on to it forever, and then later we'll, you know, go back and put a Band-Aid on it, try to fix it.
Exactly it, where, you know, you want it just long enough to make sure the customer can get a lot of value out of it. And I think that's been a chief goal of ours as long as we've been around, to make sure that, you know, if the customer does want us to hold it on for longer, like, we're happy to do so. It's just, it's not us pushing for it. And I think that's the most important part. Like, make sure the customer feels in control of their data because they're trusting us with it. And so we'll lean into what their standard is.
So our companies have partnered on some use cases related to LLMs and healthcare. Do you want to talk a little bit about Integral's role in that?
For sure. So I think the Skyflow Integral partnership is definitely a very strong one, in the sense that I think we bridge the gap between two problems. You know, Skyflow, especially with regards to, or only with regards to the healthcare clients that we work together, I'll say Skyflow comes in and can take information and data and de-identify it very quickly and successfully. And so then the part two comes in where how do you get the compliance around making sure you can activate that data as soon as possible? And I think that's where, you know, being a tech first company Integral and then being a tech first company Skyflow, our joint processes deliver this, what I'll call like a pristine conveyor belt to take unusable radioactive data to usable and ready to ship out. And I think that's where, you know, we have two very complementary surfaces where I think it's very simply put, y'all edit the data, we make sure it's in the most compliant format. And then if it's not, we fix it together and then we make it happen. And so I think that relationship I haven't seen exist with two tech players in the entire industry. And I think it's no doubt we've grown our businesses together, especially on the LLM side of things where speed and quality matter equally. And so I think that's probably a good high level description of how we work together so far.
Yeah, I mean, there's always this challenge. You know, it's I think one of the key historical challenges with data and particularly sensitive data is balancing, hey, we need to secure, we need a private, we need to, treat this data with the utmost respect, but we also need to keep it usable. And, you know, if we, you know, lock it up, throw away the key, it's not super usable. And I think that's kind of been the history is like, we either like don't know what to do with it, but we're going to hold on to it just in case we can make it usable at some point. And we haven't really figured out tooling to like, you know, make it actionable, or we, you know, completely just throw it away because we don't know how to, you know, action it, or we take on the risk of essentially using it in a way that's maybe not secure. And I think now especially when we're talking about like LLMs, this combination of, you know, Skyflow and Integral together is allowing you to keep the data secure, meet the utmost standards of privacy and compliance, while also keeping it usable for all these like downstream things that you want to actually do with the data, whether that's training an LLM or analytics or something like that.
And I think to hit the nail on the head, I mean, that maximization of security and privacy and compliance, I think that, to your point, was always thought about as a trade-off. And now with two tech players combining, I think we jointly are helping companies realize you can not only, you know, choose data utility, but you can also choose maximum privacy. And I think that's what's been lost before in human-driven solutions and consulting styles and whatnot, where oftentimes it was like an either or. But with two tech players, you know, doing the analyses of thousands of consultants all at once, I think you have a very powerful arsenal at your disposal as a customer to make sure your compliance officer is happy, but your CEO is also happy.
So as we start to wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to share? And what's next for Integral?
For sure. And I think what's next for us, just as a company, is that, you know, for as long as we've been around, we've been known as a compliance automation company. And I think that will always remain true, where we will continue to make sure that companies can maximize not only their data utility, but their data privacy. But I think for us, what comes next is truly doubling down on that and creating an infrastructure to where not only can we make your data sets compliant and ready to go, we can also send it to wherever it needs to go. And so becoming like an ETL tool of record, because, you know, every company, when you get a data set, asks, can I do something with this? And if Integral is your compliance provider, you all, and you're in our Integral network, you understand that this data coming in is already as compliant as can be. And so you're ready to activate it as soon as possible for whatever your business use case is. And I think, you know, what's next for us after that is also, you know, enhancing data sets. So if you do have like, you know, 2 out of 50 states in your data set, you should probably get the other 48 if that's part of your analytics goals. And so given the volume of data we see, we should be able to recommend fixes and make sure that in the process of getting you compliant, we're also enriching the value of that data, because, you know, healthcare data is very messy and we have to deal with that on our side. And we've come up with solutions. So why not let the customer get a lot of value from those internal solutions? And so that, I think, is next for us, where we're not only looking to get your data sets ready to go as soon as possible, we're also looking to make sure we can carry them for you to make sure you don't have to take on any additional liability. And we can enhance them for you, because, you know, there's no shortage of messiness in healthcare data. So we can fix that for them.
Yeah, I remember talking, I forget who it was specifically, but they had said that data in healthcare is like probably the dirtiest data that you'll ever work with, and it takes a tremendous amount of, like, you know, pre-processing to get something that's usable. So I think ETL and also data enrichment, those absolutely seem like gigantic problems, and also like a natural like extension of some of the work that you're already doing.
It's exactly that. It's kind of an end-to-end suite, where today we make sure your data is ready to go, but I think tomorrow we'll make sure your data is ready to go and it says, you know, high quality as it can be, and it's ready to go to the right place. And I think that's where we're solving a multitude of problems. but we're starting with what I like to think is the perfect wedge in.
Well, Shub, thanks so much for being here, and cheers.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation and the questions. Cheers.